Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today, I've got Himesh Patel. The British actor makes his feature film debut this week in the Danny Boyle directed and Richard Curtis written rom-com Yesterday. Himesh plays Jack, an aspiring singer-songwriter who wakes up from an accident and finds that he's the only person in the world who knows about the Beatles. He goes on to become an international rock star by singing all the hits by the Beatles, which he claims are his own. Lily James co-stars as his manager and love interest. I sat down with Himesh at the Sunset Marquee, the legendary rock and roll hotel in West Hollywood, where he talked about acting opposite Ed Sheeran, yep, he's in Yesterday too, playing a superhero someday, and so much more. It's all coming up today on The Big Ticket. Stick around. And we're back. I'm your host, Mark Malkin, and this is Himesh Patel.
So are you an actor who really wants to be a singer or a singer who really wants to be an actor?
an actor who got to play a singer. A bit, yeah.
And how much guitar experience did you have?
I've been trying to teach myself for about 12, 13 years on a really, you know, cheap electric guitar, Strat knockoff. And I played piano for about 3 years before that, but I wasn't any sort of, and still I'm not any sort of virtuoso on either instrument.
Did you have to sort of speed up your training? Did they put you in like boot camp for guitar and piano?
We did a 2-month kind of thing. We made this room at the offices to look like Jack's bedroom. Posters on the wall and a piano and a Wurlitzer and a record player and a bed that I never had time to sleep on. And Daniel Pemberton, our composer, drafted in his friend Ardair Milhan, who's also a composer and a brilliant musician. And he came in and we spent 2 months in this room, kind of drilling guitar, drilling piano, you know, vocal exercises, and obviously getting to know the songs and learning the songs. And then the main kind of thing was to shape the songs into a new mold, because of course they don't exist in the narrative. You can't just carbon copy them, because as well as Jack might know them, he has no reference point. He can't exactly copy the songs, so that was the interesting and fun part, was kind of learning the chords, getting it to a basic level, and then crafting it into something else, which meant kind of taking it to Danny giving us notes, and then kind of it landing.
You had some Beatles songs. The Beatles, the most iconic songs of all time.
Yeah.
What was it like the first time on set having to do that? I mean, were you just like, wait a minute?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. But I guess by the time I'd done it on set, we'd had this 2-month prep period, and I felt like I had some sort of ownership over our versions of the songs. Mm. So that it did feel like we were giving them something new.
Right, because you got to make sure that it doesn't sound like karaoke.
Exactly, and that's what Danny didn't want at all. He wanted it to sound fresh. He wanted it to sound new. So, I'm kind of quite glad that we managed to pull that one off, I think.
And when did Ed Sheeran come into play?
He came into play not long after I was cast. Mm-hmm. Because originally it was Chris Martin.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
In the first draft I read, it was a very early draft, but it was Chris Martin.
And what happened there?
He said he couldn't do it. He was just off tour. He kind of just wanted to, you know,
and play music.
Yeah. So and then they asked Ed.
Wow.
And Ed was like, "Of course I'm going to do it. You know, look, this film's kind of, you know, a familiar story of a guy from Suffolk who becomes the biggest star in the world." So, you know, I think Ed was actually like, "Why didn't you ask me in the first place?"
And he had to have some sort of sense of humor and self-awareness.
Yeah.
Because especially there's the scene where the two of you are competing who could write the best song. And obviously he gets quite upset. You write the best song. It happens to be a Beatles song, but...
He's brilliant. He's got such a great sense of humor. He's very nice to be around. And I think he's put in a really great performance in this film. That scene especially, I think, there were moments when we were filming that scene where I was watching him and I was like, wow, he was really relaxed. He was just kind of giving a great performance. And I was like, wow, man, like he's really great.
And then what's going to happen when you see Benedict Cumberbatch?
Oh, because of the impossible situations.
Yeah, you're a struggling musician. You want to give up, and your manager, played by Lily James, is saying, you know, you said it would be a miracle.
A miracle would have to happen.
And she said, well, you know, miracles do happen. Benedict Cumberbatch became a sex symbol. So what are you going to say to Benedict?
You know, funnily enough, the first thing we shot in this movie, we had to come to LA and do the Late Late Show section with James Corden. And so we got on a plane, me, Danny, Richard, the crew, who we were taking over. And Danny came and said, Benedict's down in first class. I was like, that's weird. And Danny obviously knows Benedict. He did a play with Benedict. Right. And he was off on his Avengers press tour. We were like, that's strange.
Did you, did you tell him that he was mentioned in the movie?
I don't know if he did, but I've been told that he has a very good sense of humor. So I'm sure he'll find it very funny.
And talk to me about Lily James.
She's fantastic.
She's so
lovely and fun to be around. She's got a great, you know, great sense of humor. She was really brilliant to be around, and she's a fantastic actress.
And the chemistry between the two of you is really great. I mean, see it from the beginning.
It's easy to get along with her, you know. Like she's fun to work with because no take is the same. You know, she'll give you something different, and then you kind of go, oh, cool, I'll play with that. You know, it's fun. She's a really brilliant actress, and it was my first feature film. She's done so much great work, you know. Some really great work, and so to work with her, and just kind of, she just leads by example, you know, and I was just kind of learning from everything she was doing.
Obviously you have experience acting EastEnders for quite a long time, but what was it like walking on set for your first feature film?
Yeah, it was kind of mad. What was great was that I had that period of preparation, and it was at the London offices. So in between, you know, when I got sick of trying to learn a song that I wasn't quite getting right, I'd just go make a cup of tea in the kitchen and then walk up to the offices and kind of check in with what everyone was doing, you know, in the locations department or, you know, in the costume department, and just kind of get to know all that stuff, which comes from my time at EastEnders. I really love doing that there as well, where you just kind of go and see all these people who are really working hard, you know, behind the scenes to make this all happen. It's nice to kind of go and hang out with them and kind of just see, you know, what's going on, how's it going. And it was really fascinating to see the journey of it all. So by the time you get to set, I felt a little less intimidated by what was happening, because I knew so many of the people and there was already a bit of camaraderie there.
So when you sign the contract, does the contract say, oh, by the way, you're going to be performing at CinemaCon, Tribeca Film Festival, Tower Records building in LA.
Did you
know this all came with it?
Not specifically, no. No one told me that I'd be doing Caesar's Palace, but there you go, it happened. Yeah, it's pretty great. I knew
you and Celine Dion.
Yeah, so there you go. That's one for the gravestone.
Does this inspire you to want to pursue a music career?
I don't know if it does. I think, you know, I'm an actor at the end of the day. I've just been gifted this amazing opportunity to do things like, you know, like that. But it's given me a confidence. I've always loved music. I've always loved, you know, playing music, however little I played it when I was a kid, and singing. And I found my confidence again with it. I'm proud of the work that I put in to get, you know, a lot better at guitar and get a lot better at piano. And, you know, I found that within myself too, that I can do, you know, I can apply myself and do these things. So I don't want to lose it. And, you know, I'd like to just kind of carry on and maybe make some music just for myself, you know.
So you're a leading man of South Asian descent. How important is that to you for the world to see that?
Very important. Yeah. I think at this point we still need to kind of, we do need to see that more. But what I'm proud of with this one is that wasn't the aim. It wasn't like they went, okay, but this is great, but we need to cast someone of a minority ethnicity in this role.
Right.
It was just the fact that they cast the net wide, because, you know, they looked at the role and quite intelligently went, well, this role doesn't have to be played by, you know, a white heterosexual male. It could be played by anyone. So let's just kind of see. And I believe they cast the net quite wide, and I just happened to be the right guy for the part, which then in turn now changes the narrative in a way. It's like, you know, well, a guy of my background can play a role like this. I think that needs to happen more and more, really. You know, there's two ways of doing that. There are stories that are going to be told where that perspective is important, where a specific perspective is important, and right. you have to think about how you cast that role. And there are roles like this where the perspective isn't necessarily key, mm. but the role is could be open to someone of any background, really. So, yeah, the changes are positive, I think, but the conversation is happening and continues to happen. It should continue to happen because that's the only way that things change.
And then there's, you know, the importance of a little kid looking up on that screen and going, he looks like me.
Completely. I mean, look, when I was growing up, it was like a handful of people you'd see on telly. And it would be, you know, this thing that was kind of a joke amongst people of minority ethnicity of kind of like you're watching the telly and it's like, oh my God, I'm dad, there's a brown guy on TV. You know, it's big right. news. It's big news. But it's happening more and more. And, you know, that generation inspired my generation to go out and pursue it. Mm-hmm. And you know, and hopefully our generation can kind of redefine what our place in the industry is and then in turn kind of galvanize the next generation to not settle for anything less than what the generation above has kind of got. So
do you feel pressure of a responsibility to be that role model, to make sure, you know,
I feel the responsibility, yeah. but I'm not sure if I feel the pressure of it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I look on as a burden. It's a responsibility. You have it, and you and you know, it's a privileged position to be in, right. you know, and I think I'd like to use it well.
And then let's talk about, so you get into this accident, obviously, in the movie. You wake up from this accident, the world has forgotten about the Beatles, but you also wake up from this accident and you're missing some teeth.
Yes.
Which is really hard to look at when you first open your mouth. Did you ever like walk off set with that look?
I didn't, because I, you know, I couldn't eat food when I had those teeth in, but it was kind of crazy. I remember I sent a photo, I think to my sister or someone, when I first put them in, and she was like, "I don't want to see that. That's horrible. I thought something had happened to you." Like, you know, it's amazing. This guy Chris Lyons, he runs this company out of this little like bungalow in mm-hmm. on the outskirts of London. And you look him up on IMDb, he's done everything.
Right.
He's done every show that requires any sort of, you know, broken teeth or fangs or something like that, you know? It's incredible. And I was like, wow. I hated looking at myself.
You know? Well, I love the fact that they didn't fix your teeth right away. It went with the character, obviously, because, you know, he's this working guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the money to fix the
teeth. No, yeah, yeah.
But that they kept it for a while. There were a few scenes where I was like, when are they going to fix his teeth? But it just
well,
made
that,
sense.
The scene where he plays Yesterday and realizes that he's, you know, he doesn't have any teeth for any of that. And I was a bit like, does it look a bit too silly? It's supposed to be quite a moment, isn't it? And Danny was like, no, it's you've got to keep the teeth.
What kind of director is Danny Boyle?
He's an inspiring, energetic, and collaborative director. You know, he's with you the whole every step of the way. He's he's feeling it with you. You know, he's so vibrant and youthful. Yeah. You know, and that comes across in his work, of course. But it's such a privilege to have worked with him and felt that connection that he gives you. You know, when we were filming the scene at Liverpool Lime Street, he was getting emotional. You know, when he came to give us a note, you could tell he was feeling that pain with us.
Wow.
And that's something that you might not get from everyone. So it's been a really, really privileged thing to work with Danny.
So have you heard from Paul or Ringo?
I haven't, no. I think Danny's heard from Ringo.
Yeah.
I think Ringo's seen it and he's said some nice things. And Danny's also heard from Olivia, George's widow. And she said some very nice things, which means the world, you know, really. That's, it's obviously you want to connect with people, right. And we're glad we're now hearing that people really love the movie and that they feel joy and connection to it. But to hear it from someone like Olivia Harrison is something else entirely. I mean, it's really special.
Well, I noticed in Vogue, there was a photo of you in Vogue and you're wearing Stella McCartney.
Yes, yeah.
I'm assuming that was done on purpose, or was it
yeah,
just
kind
like
of.
You're like, oh, I like those pants, and they're like, by the way, they're Stella McCartney.
Well, I had this thing, you know, when I started thinking about the publicity route for this whole thing. As actors, you know, you kind of go and you have the privilege of being, you know, people giving you clothes to wear, right, or various things, photo shoots and that kind of thing. But I've always had a thing for the fashion industry, the ethics of the fashion industry. We need to be a lot more responsible in that sense. And, you know, if you're going to be working with brands or you're going to be kind of dressed by brands, that kind of thing, then I'd like to do it with brands who are conscious of that kind of, right, ethical choice. And I had read into Stella McCartney and her work, and she does amazing work in that way. Obviously, you know, because it runs in her blood to, right, have some consciousness about the world. But yeah, so that's kind of, it was a conscious choice, and I wore her clothes to the London premiere the other day,
that's,
and
awesome,
to Tribeca as well. So yeah.
Have you heard from Stella?
I haven't heard from Stella herself, but you know, thank you, Stella, if you're listening to this podcast.
And then just some fun questions. When was the last time you cried watching a movie?
Last time I cried watching a movie.
And you're not allowed to say your own in the premiere.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was just so good. I cried. The one I can remember, there's a beautiful animated film called The Song of the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Irish animated movie. And it was one of those where I towards the end of the film, there was a beautiful moment. And I wasn't even doing that thing where you're crying, you know, where you've just got tears running down your cheeks. I was like on the verge of like sobbing, crying, you know. So that's the last time I remember.
What was it about? What was
it? It's about this kid and like he loses his mum, uh-huh, you know, and it's these kids kind of, you know, and their dad, and yeah. I need to watch it again, actually.
Are you a crier in movies?
Yeah, when it gets me, it really, yeah, does. Sometimes it's the oddest moments, like. Probably, you know, three of my favorite movies are the Before trilogy, Richard Linklater's. And that first movie, you've gone on this journey with these two people, and then he takes you to all the locations where they were,
right,
in Vienna throughout the, mm-hmm, day, and they're not there anymore. It's the morning after, and they've left. And it floored me. I remember when I watched it first, I was like, "That's, you're killing me!" Like, I can't,
right, right,
because it's the exact shot. But it's the morning and they're not there anymore.
Right.
And it really got to me, yeah.
Now we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Himesh talks Batman and why he'd love to play a superhero. Now we're back with more Himesh Patel. Speaking of movies you could watch over and over again, what are some of the movies that you're flipping through the telly and you're, yeah, like, that's on, I gotta watch it.
All of Richard Linklater's films, I guess. The Dark Knight is one I could watch over and over.
Why is
again.
That?
It was a huge film for me.
Yeah.
A really huge moment. I was 17 and it was coming out, and yeah, it just kind of redefined what the blockbuster can be.
Okay, so if you're going to play a superhero, who do you want to be? Start pitching.
Let's find a brown superhero. Let's do it. I think they're out there, right? Well, it doesn't have to be, you know.
It could be anyone.
That's
also the thing with these superhero movies and the comics, when people are like, well, he can't be this, he can't be that. I'm like, he's a superhero.
He's a superhero.
Whatever you want.
Guy can fly, you know? Yeah.
And I love what Stan Lee said about Spider-Man. He said,
right,
every kid could relate to Spider-Man because they imagine themselves underneath the mask.
Yeah, yeah. Which is what was so amazing about that Into the Spider-Verse,
yeah,
movie, was that, you know, it was all over that. But yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about that kind of genre is it kind of, you know, when it's at its best, I think, when it's saying something about the world.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of what I loved about The Dark Knight, especially. It was saying something about society.
And another Brit's going to be Batman. Robert,
I know,
Pattinson.
Yeah, exciting, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
The Brits love that Batman.
It's funny, and we had, you know, so many Brits playing the three most popular superheroes.
I know.
That's funny.
And then what's the movie that inspired you to be an actor? What's the movie that you remember watching going, I want to do that?
Gosh, that's tough. I've been told, and I do remember watching Aladdin, the original Aladdin, mm-hmm, over and over again. And I just remember Robin Williams as the genie. Just And apparently my sister had to babysit me a lot, and she... If she just put Aladdin on, I would just shut up. I wouldn't make a noise. And I just seem to remember that, you know. Because I was quite boisterous and performative,
right,
from a young age. That might have been part
of it. But that could just It's like your lullaby.
Yeah. But then, you know.
But you wouldn't sleep. You would just watch it.
Exactly. And then perform it forever.
Amesh, thank you so much. This
thank
was great.
You. Yeah.
You know, great Thanks. Movie. Just, you know, I took my husband to see it the other night.
Right.
And you just walk out smiling.
Yeah.
You just can't. And it's a nice, because, you know, there's a lot of dark content out there.
Sure.
It's very easy to be cynical in this world. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to be just, everything's a black cloud. But you see something like this and you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
We could feel good.
Oh, that's great. That's very nice to hear. That's kind of what we wanted.
So, yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
That was Yesterday's star Himesh Patel. The movie is in theaters on June 29th. Now, coming up next week, get ready to be frightened because I'm chatting with Jack Rayner, star of the upcoming horror thriller Midsommar from Hereditary writer and director Ari Aster. We talk scary movies, going full frontal, and more. Don't forget, a new episode of The Big Ticket drops every Thursday at iHeartRadio or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And remember to follow me on Twitter at Mark Malkin. See you next week.